Calling the Dogs with Chancey and Chi, and I'm pretty sure we have forgotten how to do this by now, with as long as it's taken us to get ready to start this episode. I think we've been talking to each other for almost an hour now, and not actually recording, but good to be back, good to see you, man. We've had all kinds of life stuff happening since the last time we did this, just all kinds of fun, huh?
All kinds of fun, brother. The good thing is we were never experts at this in the first place, so I don't know if anybody's going to really be able to tell the difference. But yeah, Chance, man, about to be a dad here within the next month, right?
Yeah, we're closing in. Like I told you, she's locked and loaded, and we're ready to go here. And we're due in less than 30 days, and then you've got number two on the way. So we're just got all kinds of stuff going on.
Number two on the way, man, and I can tell you from experience, still don't know nothing. Still just winging it pretty much every day, and I think that's what most parents will tell you, even if they have four or five kids. They're like, yeah, we still don't know what we're doing, and I think that's really how it should be in the first place. You know, we're just figuring this thing out as we go along, but yeah, man, so got a lot of crazy stuff going on. Of course, we're not near as far along as y'all are in this process, and We still got a few months here, but yeah, due in September, number two, another baby boy, and Chancey's got a girl on the way. So you know what, she's gonna be probably a bigger dog fan than any of us, though.
I feel pretty confident about that. So, with all that being said, it's been a while since we have recorded, and I feel like the college football landscape is nothing like we left it. It is an entirely different place, and I feel like anytime we'd have a gap of a couple months or something like that, it's everything's on its head. But whole new world, man, and I don't really know what to think about it. I think probably the biggest news, non-Georgia related, that happened not long after our last episode is, or the furthest thing that's happened is Nick Saban, the king of college football, has retired. And I don't know if you and
Hallelujah.
I have actually
Hallelujah.
I don't know if you and I have had a chance to talk about it. So tell me your thoughts here. Tell me what you're thinking.
So first of all, you gotta give the man credit for where credit is due. I mean, the guy was, there's a reason that you refer to him as the king of college football, because I mean, let's put it this way, Chancey. I mean, we haven't really discussed it thoroughly, but you and I and our boys have been texting about it, obviously, since it happened. Thank God they didn't release this news today. I would have been falling for an April Fool's joke again. But, you know, we were texting about it, and we were just talking about the impact that Nick Saban had directly with the Georgia football program over the last decade. And you can look at the series history or what have you in the past decade and or maybe 15 years and say he has kept us from getting three or four other national championships in the last 15 years. I mean, you can easily say 2012. I still think, despite the fact that Alabama team was really, really, really good and obviously just destroyed a Notre Dame team that year, but still think that we would have beaten a Notre Dame team, that Notre Dame team that year. And then obviously in 2017, we played them in the national championship. You could definitely say, I would say even definitely last year, I think is probably a pretty good 20 in the 2023 season. I mean, if they didn't beat us in the SEC championship and we got into the playoffs, I felt like we would have, you know, it would have been a different gear that we were on. I mean, and you could look at the Florida State game. That's not a very good example of what, you know, because they were playing without, you know, all their guys. They can give us all the excuses they want. We still would have beat them by like four touchdowns, even if they had everybody. But I think that we were in a good position to make a run last year. And then, you know, you can still even say the 2018 season. I mean, the 2018, you know, and honestly, thank God we played them again in the national championship in 2021, you know? So it's crazy to think that, you know, he has kept us from three or four more or additional national championships in the last 15 years. But the guy's legacy is unmistakably, to me, he is the greatest college football coach of all time. I don't, like, you can talk about Bear Bryant all you want. That's a different era of college football. And in a purely managerial perspective, not even close. I mean, that guy was just coaching football. And I get it. You got to do some recruiting and all that. From what I understand, Bear Bryant, all he had to do was come in and set his houndstooth hat on the table and forget it when he left or something like that. And they would call him and say, hey, you know, I'm going to be Crimson Tide. You know, so different era of college football. Nick Saban, obviously, until Kirby removes his crown one day, still the greatest college football coach of all time, bar none.
Well, and I think we definitely missed out on some opportunity to that 2012 season will live with me and all of us forever on what could have been.
Because you went to that game. I did not.
Yeah, I was there, and I was catty cornered from the I was on the exact opposite corner where Conley caught that ball, and it will be seared into my memory forever. But I think at the same time, I'm very thankful for Saban and that he's gone. I'm very thankful that he is no longer a part of he's no longer coaching. But I think what's been big for us is how much it has pushed us to become who we are now. I mean, you can get real meta with all this and saying that college football is the kind of crazy world that it is now because of him. I mean, he is what pushed all of this to where it is. And I think some of it would have happened over the course of time, but Alabama's presence and the way that they've dominated the sport and he pushed everybody to go to a new level. And Kirby was a part of
Kirby Smart is not, he's the greatest example. He is not who he is today without Nick Saban. And I'm not trying to gush too much over Nick Saban. I mean, I still hated the guy.
Oh, yeah.
But I respected the hell out of him, always. I still think he is an incredible coach. But, yes, Kirby Smart would not be who he is today without Nick Saban, no doubt.
Well, and the whole sport would not be where it is because he's the one that – I mean, he is the what has moved the SEC into the realm that it is. He moved the sport to where all these programs – a lot of your high tenured coaches that have been around that might have won a national championship in 20 years, that's not enough. That's not enough in this world if you're a part of that kind of supposed top tier of college football. You've got to be doing it at a more regular pace. And so a lot of what's happening is because of him. But I think the benefit for us and where we lost some of those national championships, we are better prepared now than we ever have been for what is coming. And I think we've seen that with Kirby, obviously having already two national championships in his time, and so I think we're teed up better than most, if not all, in the post-Saban era. But the thing is, it's the most volatile time of college football that there obviously has ever been. And so, what is going to happen? Like, what are the next 10 years going to look like? And absolutely nobody knows, because with playoff and potential already talking about expanding a playoff that hasn't even been expanded yet. I mean, there's all kinds of crazy conversations going on what's going to happen. And so no matter what, through all of that, I think we're in a good place to kind of be in that top spot or in that upper echelon because of where Kirby has put us and obviously what he learned from Saban. But it was almost poetic, and that he leaves in the midst of all this chaos, and it's like we're in the new era now, and he's going to be on TV and on ESPN and getting paid all kinds of money, but you know it's going to piss him off not being out there. And you know what, I have to get some enjoyment out of just him being pissed off at something. So
yeah,
I got to get it where I can, because he's pissed me off for most of my life and pissed off most of the college football world. So anyway, it's going to be interesting to have a season with him not coaching, and going to be interesting to see the new regime of Alabama football too, because we're going to get to see it up close and personal next year.
Who's the guy that they brought in again? I know it was the Washington coach. What's his name again? Oh, man. This is really bad that we're both
This is embarrassing.
Well, the thing is, so, I mean, before we can, will you find that for me? Because I can't type with one hand.
Kalen DeBoer.
DeBoer. I thought it was DeBoer. I just was like, I didn't want to say that. And people would be like, no, that's a head football coach at Navy or something. So that's the problem, is that, you know, I feel it's interesting because it feels like almost like our fan base is already kind of ridden Alabama off. And I don't want to say that they're going to be – that's the interesting thing is they're still going to have a lot of really good players. But immediately, Chancey, immediately, their season win total for next year dropped down to below 10 for the first time since – probably Nick Saban's first year at Alabama. It's at 9.5 is the over-under line. So you mean to tell me that even with some of those guys, this coach is coming in, he's bringing some guys from Washington. They also had a ton of guys transfer out. Don't get me wrong. They didn't keep everybody. I mean, even, Caleb Downs, transferred to Ohio State. Should have transferred to us. Still kind of pissed about it. But you still got some of these guys that stayed there that are still household names, and he's going to have a good roster to play with. Now, that being said, you also can look at, we're playing in Tuscaloosa this year, and I think we're now a 3-point favorite, I believe, in Tuscaloosa against Alabama. If we were, unheard of if Nick Saban is still there. So there's got to be a little bit of, I mean, there's smoke all around this program right now, and I think a lot of people are leaning towards the lower end of the spectrum, I mean, in terms of what's that program going to look like this year? How far is it going to fall off? This DeBoer guy obviously did a good job with Washington. Can he recruit the Southeast? If he can't recruit the Southeast, he's going to last about maybe 2 years there. And that's the problem, is that who the hell in their right mind? Like, they reached out to Dan Lanning. They reached out to, I'd say DeBoer was probably their third or fourth choice at Alabama. But like he's not a Southern guy. He's not a guy that's going to be able to recruit the state of Alabama or state of Georgia or state of Florida extremely well compared to these guys that have been doing it since they were freaking, in high school. Excuse me. Hope that's not too loud on there. But yeah, so that's the difference and I think that's why there's already this projection, this forecasting of this program just completely falling off a cliff. And it just gives you there's more credence to what Nick Saban did there and how successful. And, we just had a thing, Kirby just had a press conference the other day. He was talking about consistency and how I know you and I were talking earlier about how we just haven't seen a ton about the team here lately, but that was one thing I did see that stood out to me that, Kirby's sitting here talking about these last, since he's been, besides if you take out Kirby's first year at Georgia and how consistent we've been since 2017, it is a remarkable feat. And he even said not even Alabama has done that since then. Alabama had that 1 year, was it 2019 or 2021? No, obviously it wasn't 2021. We played them in the national championship. I think it was 2019. They played Michigan State in like a Florida Bowl, which is crazy to think. But the consistency of this program with Kirby Smart at the helm has been, I don't want to say it's been understated. I think everybody has been looking at our success here. You can't say, hey, we've won two national championships in the last 3 years, and people say, oh yeah, you're still underrated. I think everybody knows what this program is and what it's going to continue to be. But with this NIL stuff and the transfer portal and the combination of the two, and you got programs like USC, who, Chancey, I mentioned to you earlier, stole a 5-star commitment from us this past week, Justice Terry out of Manchester, Georgia, which we had to look up. We didn't know where it was. So we got this USC program who is obviously going to reemerge at some point. You're coming off of the Caleb Williams hype. They've got two of the top prospects in Georgia committed for next year in 2025, which, like, to me, at the end of the day, are you going to be able to build a program off of two players? probably not. You got to stack them. That's what Kirby always says. You got to stack these classes. And that started with 2016 with him, right? And then you go on and on. And honestly, the biggest, his first recruiting class was really keeping Sony and Chubb and those guys and, you know, Lorenzo, Bellamy, those guys stuck around for that year. But anyway, long story short, you know, we're seeing the emergence or the reemergence of programs like USC because those guys, that's a private school, man. They can do whatever the hell they want to. Their NIL goes, it might even go straight through the school. We don't know, but they can do whatever they want. And so it's a problem because you're going to start to see these guys flipping all the way from the East Coast to the West. And I mean, we've already seen Bear Alexander say, hey, peace out. And it goes over there and becomes nobody. And that's, you can point to that, but I think Kirby is he hates negative recruiting so much. I don't think he's willing to do that. I don't think he wants to burn bridges. He's not going to say, hey, Bear Alexander left us. See what happened to him? I don't know. So we're going to see programs pop up. Like, is Nebraska going to be better? Those guys are going to be funneling money through their program. This whole, it's like you said earlier, Chancey. I mean, we're coming up on the first year of the 12-team playoff. They've already decided that the following year is going to be a 14-team playoff. Is it the following year or is it the year after that? Is it 27?
I think it's the year after that, but we can double check that.
Anyway, so they've already approved that, which 14 teams makes no sense to me. And I'm not even sure what the format would be. But at the end of the day, Kirby even brought up the fact that, you know, how many times in this CFP era have we been number 5 or number 6 and would have obviously been in the dance, you know, quote unquote in the dance, you know, those years as well. So, I don't know, man. This whole thing, there's just a lot of uncertainty about this college football landscape right now. It's fun on one end, and it's also terrifying on the other.
Well, and it's good for us to be where we're at, and in this chaos, our team is the team that is has their head on straight for the most part, and we've put ourselves in a position to succeed, and Kirby's done that, and my fear is, and we've talked about it before, is that my fear is that this is not something that is sustainable as it used to be, and you can't be doing you can't do this forever, and so is how long is Kirby gonna last at this? I mean, he's been with us since 2016. He's been with this is his eighth season, and so. How will eighth or ninth or whatever? Is he on the back half of his time with us? Are we starting a new round of this? Because it's going to be a whole new world, man. And how long are you going to want to put up with this crap when you're making millions of dollars a year, and you don't have to have that much? I mean, I think he's a competitive guy, and he's not going to put up with it forever. But I think there will be some leveling off eventually, but it could take 10 years for that to happen. I mean, that's kind of the scary part. And,
did you see some of Saban's comments the other day?
Mm-hmm. He was on Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
I mean, he was making,
I mean, just talking about like, hey, look, this is the things, the values of this sport and what he used to believe in. He's like, it just doesn't exist anymore. These guys are, look, I mean, it's tough because I think you and I, we beat this thing like a dead horse. But when you look at it, it's like, all right, I think everybody was kind of, to a certain extent, was like, okay with these guys making some money off their name. Like, if a guy could sign a jersey and get paid for it, I was fine with that. But where I just, where this thing fell off was where all of a sudden these kids, I don't want to say they just got so much leverage, but I mean, all of a sudden that's the first thing that they ask about. That's what Saban said. He's like, that's the first thing they ask about. He's like, we have these end of the year meetings and they come in that, you know, it used to be an evaluation and then we talk about how we can move forward from there. And, you know, now it's like, instead of an evaluation, they don't want to hear anything. They want to skip to what am I going to get? What are you going to give me to keep me here? And that's, some people are talking about how it's a hypocritical situation because these coaches leave and go to another program and all that. But at the end of the day, they are salaried employees, right? First of all, you know, they're on contract. But second of all, they have a much different, I mean, if you're talking about like their job description, I mean, it goes a lot longer than those kids who need to be able to sack a quarterback to get paid, right? So, and I'm not trying to belittle or undermine what they do on a daily basis. I know it's a lot of tough, hard work, physically and mentally and emotionally. But at the end of the day, like you're comparing a CEO to a guy who's, you know, an analyst kind of type situation. And I think they get paid accordingly. But at the same time, that is a lot for somebody who's Nick Saban. What is he, 70? He's upper 70s. And to your point, Kirby is, he's starting to get to that point where, hey, who knows, man, he might get burnt out. I hope not. I hope he's got at least 10 more years, but it's scary. It's a completely different landscape, man.
Well, and we've talked about it a bunch, but this whole world is, it's going to get a part of it because of the NCAA's incompetence to be able to do anything right. But the other part of it is the lack of rules and the lack of actually a game plan is what got us to where we are, where you've got this, what you call it, the Wild West in space last time. That's really what we're dealing with here, is because there basically are no rules. And so I think you've got to get some structure is going to have to come of it. I do think the kids need to get paid, because there's too much money in the sport for them not to. And I've definitely come around on that. And at the same time, there's, and I've talked about it multiple times, we're on the pendulum swing, and there's going to be a correction that comes back, and I don't know what it's going to look like, but we're going to see it. And I think Kirby has been able to see past it, because you're talking about some of these guys that are flipping and going to some of these other schools. You're going to have some of those guys flip, but you're going to have to see, you're going to see the guys that stay with a culture that is founded on the team and creating something special. And you can see a lot of guys are opting for that. And I think guys are going to know that, yeah, I can get this NIL deal here, but if I want to play at the next level, we're going to talk about the draft here in a little while, I need to go somewhere that's going to prepare me for that and put me in a position to go to the next level, because I know that I can do that. I need to be preparing myself. And so that conversation,
Julian Humphrey even said as much. He said the other day that's pretty much why he stayed. And I don't know how truthful that is. You know, he might be getting paid a crazy amount of money to stay here, which we can say now, and it not nobody skips a beat. But yeah, I mean, he said the other day that basically I wanted to go home, kind of wanted to be with my family and be around the people I grew up with, kind of thing. But at the end of the day, they taught me into it to stay in because of the development aspect of it.
Well, and that's going to be the thing, is you really want guys that buy into that and want to get better, because a lot of these guys that commit to how much can I get right now, they're not going to have what it takes to go to the, and that's just like with anything, they're not going to have what it takes to prepare to go to the next level and get to that next level. And you're seeing it with all kinds of guys. I mean, you talk about a Barry Alexander that just kind of disappeared off the map, did not want to stay and get better, and just got worse. And go out to LA. I mean, some of these flashy guys, man, they're gonna go out to LA, go to USC, and they're gonna get eat up by the Southern California skies and the money that's flowing around out there and whatever else you do in California. But but that's just.
Do you happen to follow Matt Leiner on Instagram or anything?
No.
So I started following. He's actually a pretty funny follow. He's entertaining. That's why I'm never, you know, it's not like we grew up big Matt Leiner fans. But, you know, seeing his success, he does end up he'll post stuff and share stories about how, like, growing up at USC. It's kind of like, do you remember the 30 for 30 on the Hurricanes? I mean, they did a couple of them, but the one specifically in like the 70s and 80s was more so like, man, these guys were bigger celebrities than half of Miami, right? Same thing with them and USC. Like, he would always talk about all these clubs they got into and all that. Some people can manage that better than others. Obviously, besides the whole Reggie Bush getting his Heisman taken away, you never heard anything about those two guys. And I don't know if they were just protected, but Matt Leiner and Reggie Bush, two hell of a good, great players, you know, that's a different level, man. That's a different level. And then you got a guy who's obviously he's from Texas. This is Barry. We're talking about Barry Alexander here. From Texas, obviously gets he was in like what three different high schools growing up. Decides to commit to us, and I think you and I and probably a lot of the Georgia football fan base was kind of giving the kid a benefit of the doubt. I mean, we didn't really hear a whole lot from him other than what was on the field while he was here. Wins the national championship with us, and all of a sudden bolts, you know. And I've heard some stories about it, and I'm not going to get into it. But he bolts over to USC. I said, sorry, kid, like you're not one of those guys that's going to be getting into every little VIP room or whatever until you prove it. And then all of a sudden, you know, he went over there, and I think he had like 2 sacks on the year, something like that. I mean, didn't do a whole lot. But, yeah, it's some people handle it better than others.
Well, and it's about how do you prepare these guys to be able to manage what comes with it and how to be a celebrity and deal with the money. And so it's we can belabor the point, but we'll be doing it probably every off-season episode from now until the end of time because this is not going to be anything new. This is going to be the story for years to come. And so we don't know what it's going to look like, but I think it's safe to say that we have put ourselves in a position to succeed in this type of environment, and that's because of Kirby and the team that he's assembled around him. And so I think this season I think this season's going to tell kind of where are we at, and you've kind of gone through a few iterations of a season after the national championship. How are we bouncing back after losing some key guys this year, losing a Bowers, and we're going to see what Kirby's made of and having some new coaches on the team.
I mean, who would you rather have at the helm? I mean, who would you rather have leading our team than Kirby freaking Smart? I mean, it's just so funny when you think back about that 2016 or, you know, the 2015, Mark Rick gets fired the day after we, you know, barely beat Tech, and just kind of one of those things that, like, obviously you and I grew up with Coach Rick, and he, you know, we loved him to death, and, like, a lot of people took that extremely poorly and thought it was a rash decision. And, you know, 2 years later we go to the national championship and haven't really looked back since. I mean, I know we've had some not so great seasons since then. I mean, the 2020 season was not a fluke, but it was just a weird year. You know, we had a fully SEC schedule, blah blah blah. So you're looking at, you know, look at Kirby Smart's resume, and you're talking about navigating, I mean, what all he's had to do. I mean, we're talking about the CEO position, but like even with COVID year being in the middle of all of that, what he has done so consistently, it's just incredible. But yeah, I mean, you don't want anybody else. There's nobody you can think of right now. Every single team in the rest of college football would rather have Kirby Smart leading their team than whoever their coach is. It don't matter. Ohio State, Texas, all of them, every single one of them.
This doesn't
obviously get Michigan lost Jim Harbaugh, but you know,
this doesn't get talked about enough. This is his first head coaching job.
Yeah,
like that doesn't get acknowledged. That like this is the biggest. This is his first head coaching gig, and he has just assumed this position of being like the best guy in all of football. Everybody's just assumed that he's been doing this for a long time. He's had one head coaching job.
Yeah.
And it's this.
And all of a sudden he's got a coaching tree. Like we talk about the Nick Saban coaching tree, which is obviously nobody touches that, but like all of a sudden he's got some guys out there that are being successful that came from a coordinator position under him, and you know, the Dan Lannings of the world. We're not gonna talk about Mel Tucker.
We don't associate with him.
we don't know exactly what's going on up there, but you know, we had a DB's coach that got hired to Syracuse? Mm-hmm. Fran Brown, is that his name? Dude, it's so bad. I mean, the whole, like, obviously we've got the guys. I mean, shoot, well, I mean, we finally, this is a big thing. Old Dell finally took a head coaching job. He probably got offered a few. I wonder if he was waiting for something like a little bit closer or like a smaller scale program or something like that. But he, Old Dell McGee, man. Georgia State Panther. Forgot about that, man. Was that like a month or two ago?
I can't remember. I was wondering. I knew he probably hasn't been getting a ton of head coaching offers. That's probably what he was shooting for. That's probably what he wanted, is kind of that kind of opportunity to go and own his own program. And, man, he's going to kill it over there.
Yeah.
He's gonna do so good.
Well, I think he was probably waiting for something that was in the Southeast. And I think Georgia, you know, he obviously has the ties to Auburn, and like obviously has recruited in this area. But that's a good program to go to, and you don't have a crazy high expectations. I mean, if it's your first head coaching gig, it's actually, I would say, it's a lot better than even going to Georgia Southern. You know, you have an established fan base at Georgia Southern. The Georgia State football program is what, like 5-6 years old, something like that. So it may be longer than that. I just lose track of time. I've got gray hairs, man. So it's good for him. Happy for Dell. Crazy that we've kept him for as long as we did, man. I mean, he was here since 2016, right? He came in with Kirby. And we still, that's the crazy thing is, I remember I have a buddy that, you know, before we won a couple natties in a row, was talking so highly about Dabo Swinney and like how he kept all these Clemson guys like on staff and all these coaches and all that. And literally, since that conversation, all his guys have left. And Kirby, and like he was comparing it to Kirby's staff, and I was just like, and now, like, Kirby still has guys on his staff that he had back in 2016. Glenn Schumann is still there. I mean, it's crazy. And he's brought guys back. I mean, it is wild, man. And Muschamp's just, I don't know what Muschamp's going to do now. Muschamp is, I think he's just in town and probably getting a paycheck just so he can hang out with his son.
It's a sweet gig.
Yeah, that's a great gig. That's a great gig. Hell, if I was getting paid by three different teams,
I was about to say he's still making like $3 million a year.
is he still getting paid by South Carolina? Like, is that how that works? Like, I thought that if he was a tenured coach, then maybe it breached that contract. Is that not how that works? He's getting paid. He might be getting paid by three different programs at this point. Who knows?
It's really the best way to get. I mean, you get a lot of ridicule and you have to move a lot, but it's still the best way to get paid as a college football coach is just to get fired by a
program. Sign these long contracts and then just have one bad year. And if you're at a program like Florida, who doesn't, I mean, has no room for error, I mean, which is great. I love it, man. How many coaches have they had since we've had Kirby? That's the fun thing to think about. And Napier, oh, Lord help him. He might not last till the season starts.
He might not last till the end of the sentence. I mean, it's a beautiful thing to see because there's so much instability in everything. And Kirby has, to your point, he's definitely not flown under the radar, but I think is properly appreciated for what he's doing and people are expecting him to kind of assume the role that Saban left, and I don't think there's an exact way to do that. I think Saban's going to be Saban, and there's not going to be anybody to match what he did, obviously. But Kirby's kind of taking that role as the lead guy for college football, and I think we'll see how he assumes that role. And I'm to your point, there's nobody else I would hold that can hold a candle to him as being the guy that you would want coaching your team right now, because man, it has been amazing to watch, and we've got a couple seasons here that are gonna push Kirby to the limit and see what he's capable of, and because man, holy cow, do we have some schedules coming up that are going to be rough?
Yeah. So just speaking of that, might as well jump into some recent news. As of, I think it was last week, this came out that they have decided to keep the 8-game SEC schedule and just flip it for the 2025 season. So all of a sudden, we've got this crazy away schedule, and obviously playing Clemson to begin the year in a neutral site. And then all of a sudden, in 2025, although we will be bringing in a new quarterback, which is sucks to think about, man, we all of a sudden, we got a hell of a home schedule in 2025. We play Alabama at home, Texas at home. We've already talking to the Sanyes. The Sanyes are going to make a big thing. They're coming into town. They're going to get an Airbnb. We're going to cook up some barbecue or do something along those lines. Ole Miss is coming to town in Kentucky as well. So, man, that's going to be we talked about it. That's the best home schedule we've had since 2019 for sure.
And that's the I don't know if Athens is ready for for that. I mean, it's going to be pretty wild, but I'm pumped about it. And I mean, Kirby's going to be up to the task, man. I'm excited about the team that we're putting together. We're creating the depth that we're going to need to be able to manage this, and I think we're getting the right guys on our team to be ready for what's coming. So excited about that news, and I'm starting to get to the point, man. I'm excited about this year, and obviously with a lot of life changes, we'll probably not be doing all the traveling to these games that I thought I'd be doing, but that's all right. But that's okay.
That's worth having a little segment about here, Chancey, because I'm still a little butthurt about this whole. I mean, you know, I'm very thankful to have another child on the way. But so
we can confide in the people that are listening to this. Yeah, they're not going to tell.
Let's get that out of the way. I'm obviously this is a blessing from the Lord, but we're looking at our best away schedule. Like literally three out of the four big SEC away games were trips that I have been wanting to take. Number one being going to Austin, Texas. Well, our son is due September 18th, and we go to Texas like a month after that, a month and a week after that. But the weekend after, about 10 days after that due date, which, you know, who knows if he's going to come on the due date or not. About 10 days after that due date is whenever we play Alabama in Alabama. And obviously, that ain't going to happen. So, neither one of the Texas or Alabama game is going to happen. And we've been talking about this Texas game with our good friend Tyler Sanye since we were in school. So, like, you know, 15 years ago, we were sitting here talking about, hey, if we ever play in Texas, like, we're going to go have a big thing. And his parents were going to host us and all this. And lo and behold, ran into them at a wedding in January. And they were sitting there talking about all these plans. And they're like, yeah, y'all can stay here. We can eat here. We can cook this. And we'll get tickets and all this. And I'm sitting there thinking, I was like, that was a month into us knowing that my wife was pregnant. And I was just like, And I almost just told him on the spot. I was like, this is the worst. So, yeah, man.
Quitting ruining my dreams.
Yeah. At least your child is gonna be here before the season. And you'll have an idea of what you can make. I told him, Chancey, let's go ahead and plan on this. I told my wife, I said, look, we're not going to be able to go to any of these away games, but we do play Clemson in Atlanta to begin the season. Like maybe we can swing that.
Squeeze that bad boy in there. Come on.
Yeah. I would, because I definitely was not planning on. I think everybody was like, oh shoot, man, I'm not going to spend this money to go to Clemson in Atlanta when I can go to Tuscaloosa or Austin, Texas or the Grove. Shoot, man, I forgot about the Grove. I have not been to Ole Miss or Tuscaloosa. Obviously, Texas being a new addition to the SEC, haven't been there either. So those were several away games that I was planning on. But you know, life has a funny way of shaking out sometimes, right?
Yeah, that's a good way to put that. So I agree with all said comments, but well, you know, we're just going to have to play it by ear. I have a little more potential with baby girl being born here in the next 30 days or so. So I'll have some flexibility there, but not a lot. I might make it to Atlanta, but that might be what we might be pushing it here, but we'll see.
What's the situation? I mean, this is definitely beside the point, and we're coming up on, we were sitting here talking about like, what are we going to say? And we're coming up on 43 minutes. But what's the deal with this? Is going to be the first girl in like a few generations for the Chansey family?
Yeah, so hasn't been a girl. So I guess my dad had a cousin who had a girl, but there's been one girl in 80 years in the Chanseys, and so we're having the second one here. So I said we're either breaking a curse or starting one. We don't know what we're doing here. So.
That's a hell of a way to put it.
So we're figuring it out, but yeah, we're pumped up. We're excited. So she's going to be a dog, and I'm excited to brainwash a child into becoming a dog, and because she's already been hearing a lot of the fight song, and she's been listening to all the things that she needs to be listening to. Need to get her to listen to some highlights.
Wait, mean to tell me, have you been holding the headphones to the tummy?
I haven't been holding them up there, but I'm keeping them in the general vicinity. I'm making sure that they're high enough volume.
This is awesome. We should have talked more about how we are raising our children to be a big old dog fan. So that's so funny because. Well, let me tell you, it takes a while. Whenever my son was, just barely born, he would sit there on the couch and watch anything that was on the TV. So he would watch football with me. Now it's like, good gracious, he's like, he will sit there and he actually watches golf better than he watches football. I don't know why, but now he's just like, he just wants to be playing with the toys or he's going 90-0. But, man, let me tell you, it takes a lot of Peppa Pig and a lot of Bluey or whatever to get to the point where they're like, oh, I might want to watch a football game with you. But I will say this. I bought him a Ugga, a stuffed Ugga. I think it was his first birthday. I bought him a stuffed animal Ugga, and he's got the jersey on and all that. And, you know, he used to sit on his bed with all the other stuffed animals. And I was like, man, I need to get him into that. For whatever reason, out of nowhere, he started to get to where he wanted it at night. Now he sleeps with it every night. So, you know, we're just subconsciously planting these seeds, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping he's just going to be smart enough in 20, 30, whatever, or that he's going to be able to potentially get into the University of Georgia. But... I don't know. We'll see. He's hit his head quite a few times.
He's just building character. That's all he's doing.
Yeah. Well, Chansey, we have bounced around here, and this is a typical off-season episode. If you have been following along with us in the last 6 years, we just kind of this is. And in fact, we used to do a lot more, and I feel like you know, with your wife being pregnant and me having a child, and then now my wife is pregnant again, it's just kind of one of those things. We'll fit these in whenever we can, and hopefully our wives don't kill us during the season, which is definitely a possibility. But yeah, let's Chansey, what do you think we wrap this thing up with a little bit of NFL draft analysis? And by analysis, I mean we are going to do the same thing we do every year. Just throw a dart at a board and say, hey, what round do we think these guys, these draft eligible dogs, are going to go? And
if you're betting, you should bet not what we say.
Well, you know, some of them, I feel like we could probably have some inside info. And by inside info, we have this very helpful cheat sheet here that has a rating for all of our dogs that are draft eligible. But Chansey. Unless we have anything else to cover here, we can jump into this and I'll feed them to you and see what you think.
Sure, let's just give it a whirl.
If we're not doing it now, we're never doing it because it's 47 minutes in. Chansey. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. This is not the list because this has got guys that are still on the team. I don't know. We're going to say 12 to 14 guys here. I don't know why this is a bad list, but we're going to go down here. I'll pick them out. If they're still on the team or something, I'll remove them from this list. But Chansey, the one guy that everybody's talking about, surefire top draft pick, Brock Bowers. We know he's going to go first round to somebody. Do you think he goes in the first 10 or do you think he goes in the top 20? In the next 10, sorry, the, you know, 11 to 20.
Well, I personally think he's been kind of floating around in the top 10, and you start to see on these draft boards and things like that where he is. But, you know, I'm going to say just with the way that the tight end position, and I don't know anything about the teams that are in the top 10 and what they're looking for, but with the way that the tight end position is being looked at, and we've talked about this before, the way that the tight end position is being just looked at in the NFL right now, that is a prized commodity, and to have potentially the best tight end prospect coming out of college football ever in Brock, he's got to go top 10. And if anybody gets him outside of the top 10, one of the biggest steals that has ever happened ever. I mean, it's just without, and I have no doubt saying that, because he's just that good, man. He is a game changer. He was with us for 2 years or for 3 years, and we had two national championships, and in that time frame, and so
in a back to back Mackey Award winner, top tight end in college football. He was the top 10 in college football his freshman year as well. They just, for some reason, decided to give it to somebody else. Back to back. So, I mean, three-time All-American. He was on the freshman All-American team, obviously, on the last two. The kid is a stud. Best college tight end I've ever seen, bar none. Some of these idiots are, like, talking about Kyle Pitts and how he compares to him. And, look, man, not to take away anything from – well, we'll take something away from a Florida Gator every day, but – Kyle Pitts is obviously an extreme talent, but you're looking at a receiver when you're looking at Kyle Pitts. That's what he does well, right? Brock Bowers does everything well. And I actually looked – I watched – the other night I just was trying to kill a little bit of time, and I was just watching some Ladd McConkey highlights, and I was like, let me see if I can find some Brock Bowers career highlights. And it's like, man, you think about some of those plays he made his freshman year – that looked like he was a seasoned veteran, going up and snagging balls like over top, literally mossing people. And then also, but the thing that doesn't get talked about a lot with Brock Bowers is he can truly do it all. He is a utility guy. He can line up in the slot. He can stay inside and block down. I mean, the guy can block on the next level. I don't think that, unfortunately, from what I've seen, there's not a lot of teams. Hey, I'm with you, man. I don't know a whole lot about it, but not a lot of teams in the top 10 apparently need a tight end. But man, if somebody doesn't take him in the top 10 and just know that they're going to get a hell of a player, I would be pretty surprised. Because I think a lot of these GMs, I mean, they'll overthink a lot of this. But at the end of the day, man, if you're taking Brock Bowers, you know what you're going to get in a guy like that. And I think some of it might be, he was a little hobbled last year, and maybe they're kind of, I don't know, knocking him down a peg or two because of that. But man, the guy is just a stud, and he's obviously going to be a difference maker in the next level. So,
do you need people to catch balls, and do you need people to block? All of those teams need people to do both of those things. And so, if you want the best person at it, you should get him.
Well, to your point, though, I mean, how many teams do we see these days? I mean, the Kansas City Chiefs just won the Super Bowl again, right? So who's one of their – you think about Patrick Mahomes, and then you think about Travis Kelce. This is the next player you think about when the Kansas City Chiefs. So obviously tight ends are having a another decade of dominance here. I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, you got the George Kittles of the world, and then you got that guy from – I had him on my fantasy team. What's the – Detroit Lions, I forget what his name was, but anyway, he was just a rookie this year, dominated, and so you've got that these tight ends are coming back to the point where they're a very significant point or significant position on the field. Problem is, you just don't find that many that are as good as Brock Bowers, so I think he should go in the top 10. I just think that maybe he might fall to that 11 or 12 spot is kind of what I'm thinking, but... Anyway, moving on here, Chance. We've got a guy here that I feel like he just wasn't here a whole lot or for very long. I mean, Amarius Mims is very highly rated these days on a lot of these draft boards. What do you think he goes in the first round?
I think he hits all the measurables, and he's kind of just huge. He's just that pure offensive lineman, and so these guys love getting the getting the thoroughbreds when it comes to the offensive line position. So I think there's going to be a team that needs that. So I'm going to say that he goes in the first round, because those teams that need one, they're going to go get the best that are out there. So I'm just going to – I think it'll be late, but I think he goes.
Yeah, I think he goes top 20. He's just a guy that you can't pass up. They said they have him at 6'8". Is that true? Is he 6'8"? I know he's huge, man. I remember watching some of his highlights from Blackfoot County, and dude just towered over everybody. this other offensive linemen on that team were just like short and stubby, and he was just boom, you know, massive guy. Yeah, so he can still move pretty well, but he's got that, what is it, hamstring issue? I think that might end up hurting him, but at the end of the day, somebody's definitely going to take – you're right, though. The measurables alone are going to make him a first-rounder. Chancey, next guy, Ladd McConkey is – climbing some of these draft boards, and some people are even saying he might go as high as number one, not number one, sorry, first round. I'm not sure I'm quite there yet, but what are you there?
I'm definitely not first round. I think he has shown up everywhere you can. I mean, he had a heck of a combine and has shown out at the Senior Bowl and basically everywhere he goes, he continues to wow the spectators, and he basically just did what we watched him do every game his entire career with us. We were shouting it from the mountaintops that, yeah, this is the guy. And it took a while, but everybody kind of figured out that, oh yeah, this guy's legit. I think very potential late second round. I think a lot of the first round, I think, is kind of – I just feel like they're not going to jump on it. I feel like some of these teams are going to – when it comes push comes to shove, they're not going to make that kind of call on him. But whoever gets him, they're getting the real deal. He's the prototypical used to be the Bill Belichick's Patriots. He would have fit right in. But those aren't real anymore either. So I'm going to say second round – late second round for Ladd.
Yeah, I'm probably leaning towards second round as well. I think he's a guy that a lot of people are realizing how uncoverable he was. I mean, he's so shifty. He's that size too, where it's like, all right, this is not a guy who's going to go up and get it. He's not the 6'5", 6'6" receiver. But at the end of the day, he's a guy who's going to be able to get open and get first downs. And obviously, he showed not only that ability with us, but I mean, he could stretch the field too, and he ran a 4.39 of the combine. I think that's, dude, man, that's it. That alone might propel him into the first round. But I think mid second round is probably where I think he probably ends up. I hope he just goes to a team that's fairly well established and is going to know how to use him, kind of thing. I mean, we've seen a guy. I mean, I guess his best comp in the NFL right now is probably like Hunter Renfrow, which, you know, he served a similar purpose at Clemson. But at the end of the day, I think Ladd's a better athlete than Renfrow. So we'll see, man. I obviously hope the best for him. And then we've had the last several years here, we've had some DBs go early, Chancey, and we've had some obviously some incredible cornerbacks that we've been watching play in the red and black, you know, from DeAndre Baker to Eric Stokes and Tyson Campbell, a lot of these guys that went early. Kamari Lassiter is the next guy in that line of incredible cornerbacks that we've had. I mean, the guy barely even gave up a first down last year. What do you think about him? Where do you project him to go?
I'm glad you kind of lined him up with the rest of those guys, because he fits right into that. I mean, so much of our success does not get so much of our success, he doesn't get as much credit for as he deserves for just shutting down some of the best receivers.
His third of the field was always, I mean, hey, nobody threw it his way.
And it was all season long. And this season was just another testament to that. I don't know what the rest of the draft class is like with cornerbacks. I don't have a lot of information here. I'm just going off of mine, but I feel like he's got to go second round. I feel like that's where he's got to be at, because he's just that talented.
I think there's a few other guys. I think Michigan has a cornerback that's coming in and supposed to be one of the top prospects, and maybe Ohio State has one guy. I'm just like you. You know, I don't follow the draft boards like maybe I should. I kind of get into it. When is the draft? Is what, that fourth weekend or third weekend of April? I completely forget we're even in April right now. So Kamari, I'm with you. I think he'll end up being a second rounder. I think that makes sense because, I mean, he's just not quite to that level. Sorry, I think he's talent-wise, I think he's at the level of a first rounder.
Yes.
I just don't think, to your point, I just don't think he's gotten the credit that he really deserves, and the guy was just locked down last year. So, I think Kamari, and then you've got next guy on the list here, Javon Bullard, my boy from Milledgeville, GA, baby. Dude, he's a little undersized as a safety. I think that's one of the few things that might knock him down a peg or two. But man, he is a hell of a player. He is a guy who's going to make the play. He's a playmaker, and that's what I think is going to propel him a little bit higher than I think some people might have him. But at the end of the day, you know, we're looking at, there's probably some safeties that are a little bit closer to 6'2", 215, 220. You know, something like that. I don't know, that might be a little high for safety. But, you know, you just, these guys, these GMs and these guys that sit at a table and determine who's the best prospect to take, I mean, I think a lot of them look at the measurables a little bit too much. This guy is a ball hawk and a guy who's going to be able to make plays for you. So, Javon Bullard, I've got him. He might go late second round. He might end up falling to the third round, but I hope he goes in the second.
Well, I feel like probably a third round for him, and you also are looking at a guy that played multiple positions and has a huge football IQ, and we've seen him, and I think you got a good chance for a kind of like you're talking about a if you've got a front office that understands a guy who has that IQ and understands football and has some of those intangibles that might get overlooked, I can see somebody picking him up. But I feel like he's probably going to go in the third round. Just got that kind of feeling that's probably where he's going to end up. Do I think he should be second? Yes, definitely. But I think he's probably going to fall in that third round, mid to late.
Yeah, I agree. I think he might end up going third, which, I mean, man, any of these guys that go in the top three rounds are obviously going to get paid, first rounders being, you know, signing these heftier contracts. But I think it would be a great success going from Javon Bullard was a three-star prospect that came in, worked his tail off, and then obviously developed under Kirby Smart and Will Muschamp. And, you know, that's the kind of guy you want to see come out of your program. And I obviously, you know me, pulling for the kid very, very heartily. Chancey, we've got Cedric Van Pran, man. Does he go down? Does Van Pran go down as, I mean, is he the best center that you and I have seen in our lifetime at University of Georgia?
I have no idea who would come close to him.
I think you're looking at Fernando Velasco is the first guy that I really remember being like, you know, one of the first few guys. And I mean, I think he played in the NFL for a little while. And then you got and there was definitely somebody before him in the early 2000s. And I just, you know, can't quite think of the name, but Velasco, then you've got guys like Ben Jones, who played in the league for a while and obviously was an incredible player here. You didn't really get to see him shine as much because he did not have the talent around him that Van Pran had next to him. And then you've got David Andrews is the next guy who comes to mind, who has had an incredible career with the Patriots, won a couple Super Bowls, and doesn't have Tom Brady anymore, so that, you know, it's a terrible situation for him. And Mac Jones was terrible. So to me, Van Pran, his legacy and what he did, and especially being a guy who came from New Orleans. We don't get kids from Louisiana anymore. And I don't know if we ever really have, but I mean, we actually get them more now than we used to, I feel like. But man, if you're a Louisiana kid and you don't go to LSU, that's saying something. And for him to come and then played for 4 years with Kirby, I think that's a testament to him and his character, but also he's an incredible player. I think he might be a little bit undersized for what a lot of people want, but at the end of the day, the guy was he wasn't just a serviceable center. He was the captain. And I think Tate Ratledge actually saw him. He had something in one of his recent podcasts with Brett Thorson, you know, him and the punter. They talk dogs, football, and he was talking about how he's actually Tate Ratledge is actually starting to take some snaps, and I don't think he's going to be the center. I can't remember what the guy's name that's going to be there now, but something Wilson, Jared Wilson. Anyway, long story short, Tate's you know taking some snaps so that, or he's snapping the ball because a little bit so he can be the backup tight backup center. And he's just talking about how he was texting SVP. It was just saying, it's like, man, I got such a way more of an appreciation for what you did. Like, I don't know how you did it. And to be honest with you, that happens in such a split second time, having to think about what you have to do after the ball is snapped. But you have to be the one to snap the ball in a millisecond and make sure it's in the quarterback's hands. That's a tough task, but I think Van Pran definitely stacks up there with some of the best tight ends. Why do I keep saying tight ends? I got old Bowers on the mind here.
So I was thinking you got Bowers' brain.
Yeah. So yeah, man, the centers, man, that's just he's an incredible player. Yeah, I think SVP will probably go. I think he'll go top three. I think.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't know if I threw that to you or not. All right, let's run through some of the rest of these. I mean, you don't have quite the firepower with some of these other guys, which are all incredible players, don't get me wrong. But, you know, Tyke Smith is a guy who, on this list, you know, played in that star position. Obviously, he played some safety, too, and he's a little bit hobbled for his career here at Georgia, you know, had the ACL situation and all of that. But Tyke comes in, played really well last year, but he's kind of, you know, in the shadow of the Bullards and the Kamari Lassiter's, you know, in that defensive backfield. Chancey, what do you think about Tyke? Where do you think he goes?
I think we know what Tyke's about and what all he's brought to the table. He's not one that's going to wow a lot of your guys that are scouts that are looking for these guys. So I'm gonna say probably sixth round for him. I mean, I think it could get to that point. I think he's a lot better than that, but. I think just kind of to what you're talking about, I think that could end up being where he's at.
Yeah, I think he's in that fifth or sixth round. Like I said, the injuries might hurt him a lot. But yeah, don't have a ton else to say. I mean, I think he's, you know, damn good dog, but unfortunately just doesn't feel like he really played a ton in the red and black. But he definitely made some plays for us down the stretch. Then we got my boy Dejon, man. Dejon Edwards. Running backs, man, just unfortunately just are not in a great position to be drafted very high in this situation. But, man, you're talking about a workhorse, man. I'm trying to think of exactly who. He almost is like a Thomas Brown to me. You know, he wasn't a superstar, but a really, really solid player. Obviously, put in a lot of effort. And without Dejon Edwards, I mean, there's several games that you can go back and look at. And I'm like, we don't win that football game without him. And one of them that comes to mind is that Missouri game in 2022. Was it 22 or 21? Yeah, it was 22. Yeah, when we went undefeated. So when we were playing in Missouri and towards the end of that ball game, we needed some first downs, and the guy just was a machine. So I think very highly of him. He's just obviously undersized. He's not exactly the DeAndre Swift or the Zamir Whites that we've seen in the past, you know, a few years here. And obviously not on the level of the Nick Chubbs and the Ty Gurleys, but a very good running back.
Yeah,
I'll say he's going to end up going fifth round.
Dejon is one of your unsung heroes. I mean, of our program, and just the workhorse, like you said, and proud of what he's done, and has just been a silent guy for us that has continued to put us in big time situations, and when things got rough, he kept us on top. I'm gonna say fifth or sixth for him too. I think he goes just because he had such a great year. I think people are gonna see the value there of having him on your team. So I'm gonna say sixth, just because I think that, to your point about running backs, I just don't think they're going like we think they should. So
yeah, unfortunately, just not quite the value there that they used to have. Chancey, another guy that you and I both have talked highly about in the last few years, but really just the similar situation to Tyke. You just feel like, you know, especially with him getting hurt in that Florida game in 2020, Marcus Rosemy Jackson, you know, had to come back from that and work his way back, and was not it's not like we saw the George Pickens in him come out, but the guy's got a really high ability to make a play. And I look at him almost like a Tavares King, is kind of my comp that comes to mind, and a guy who can obviously play the next level. He probably, unfortunately, lost some speed with that injury. I think he could have been in that. It says he ran a 4.49, which is, it's not slow, don't get me wrong, but I think he would have been closer to that 4.4 range, lower 4.4 range. Without that injury. But Chancey, what do you think about Rosemy? Where do you think he goes?
I think he's got incredible hands, man. Just super underrated for his talent, and I think we know what he's capable of. And he fortunately had some flashes in the Senior Bowl, and showed up for that. And so I think he was able to get some flashes there. I'm going to say sixth round for him too, just because I think probably going to go underappreciated for what he can do. But he's one of those guys that can just kind of hang out in the league for a long time. Might be like a Conley or something that just kind of is around going to some of these teams and is just hanging around for a long time, because I think he's got the work ethic, and I think he's got hands that he's a bigger guy, and he's going to be able to show up in big situations. So he's going to be a good get for whoever picks him up.
No doubt, man. He's a dog. He's a true dog. Kendall Milton, running back. You know very well that I had a love-hate relationship with old Kendall. Obviously, he turned it on a little bit last year. Was happy to see him get some success. Big running back, obviously, and he's not the fastest guy. It says he ran a 4.62. I thought he was a little bit higher than that. That's just to put that in perspective. I mean, both Sony and Chubb ran low 4.5s when they ran in the combine. So, old Kendall, you know, at 225, I mean, that's a kind of build that I think a lot of teams are looking for. But I don't know. It's just, unfortunately, you know, without him having that, I mean, he has experience, but he just doesn't have, I mean, you look at his highlight tape, and a lot of it's from last year, I feel like. But Chancey, what do you think? What do you think about old Kendall?
I think this year he started to show some of what we wanted his entire career. I think we finally got to start to see his maturity and what he was capable of. I think if he has the year that he had, if he had this year, the last 2 years previous, and we got to see a little more of that, I think we're having a completely different conversation about him and what he where he would be going. But I just don't think I think he brings a little more flash maybe this year than Dejan had in some situations. But I don't know if he gets drafted. It'd be a late sixth round if he gets drafted at all. But if he gets drafted, that'd be a win for him.
I think that somebody might take a flyer on him. I could see him going in the fifth round, probably sixth. But I think he'll go. I think he'll get drafted. It's just, unfortunately, it's like we said. I mean, running backs are just not exactly in a position to where they're going to be a high draft pick. And so, I mean, both Dejan and Kendall and this thing that we're looking at here are both – in that lower end of the potential draftees, and so I don't know, man. You know, I think he might end up being a guy that somebody just sees the measurables, kind of like what we talked about, and says, "Hey, let's take a chance on this guy." And obviously, he's a hard worker and he's built, but I think that we might see him. We might see him go in the fifth. And then last guy here, at least from what I can tell, yeah, the rest of these guys look like they're either coming back or transferring or something. Zion Logue, unsung hero, the defensive line. Not exactly. I mean, I can't think of many plays where I thought, hey, this guy made it. You know, we're sitting here comparing, if we're thinking about defensive linemen, we're thinking about the last few years that we've had. We finally got, you know, a few years ago, we finally got a defensive lineman drafted. For the first time in forever, But man, it's hard to look at Zion Logue and think in the same breath of Jalen Carter or the Jordan Davises or the Trayvon Walkers or whoever. But man, he was a pretty stout player for us. I think he was more of a run stopper than anything, and he might be a guy that goes late in the draft.
Yeah, I think he'd be another one that if he gets drafted, that'll be a big win for him. He'll get picked up by somebody eventually, but he's just more of a prototypical defensive lineman. I think you're just gonna see if there's a team that has a need for him down toward the end of the draft. He might be a guy that sneaks in there toward the end, but just not a guy that's got a lot of flair or flash to him, and just kind of doing his job. He was good for us while we had him, but nothing too fancy. So I'm kind of with you. I think if he gets drafted, it's going to be a big win for him.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Chancey, we have sat here and recorded way longer of an episode than we I think anticipated. Hopefully the audio works out, because we're sitting here, we're both in new situations, and you're trying to be quiet and make sure you don't wake up your pregnant wife, and so and I'm sitting here recording, holding the microphone in my hand, and hopefully everything sounds okay. But yeah, man, I think hopefully maybe we'll have one more episode before the season. Maybe we'll kind of discuss how the draft went, and you know, maybe a summer episode or something like that. But yeah, man, glad we can start season 7. Crazy.
Wow.
Season 7 off on the right foot.
Yeah, this has been good. I always tell my wife, I'm like, I'm going to record with she. Don't know what we're going to talk about. And she's like, shut up. You're going to talk for forever. it's like, well, we always end up finding something.
we do tend to ramble on the things that are probably less important than others. So, but yeah, man, I'm happy we were able to get back together, and you know, feels right. But yeah, man, we'll hopefully have a lot more to talk about. We didn't even talk about, we're not going to get into this, but yeah, Old Corson's coming back, and which I think if you're listening to this and you didn't know that, then probably doing something wrong. But anyway, Carson's coming back for another season. Dogs are looking good. Spring practice is going. G-Day's in a couple weekends, or three weekends from now. So everybody's going to get geared up for that. And I'm unfortunately going to be out of town for that. I wish I was going to be taking my son to it. But and you will probably be pretty busy around then. So you'll be on baby watch. So I don't think you'll be making it up either.
No, I will not be. That has not even been in my mind. So.
it's just a glorified scrimmage.
We'll talk soon, and because it's gonna be it'll be a whole different world next time we chat.
Yes, sir. Well, hey, I'm not gonna be bothering you. You just let us know when little girl's here, and we'll celebrate. But that's awesome, man. We're pumped for you, praying for you. But we'll hopefully we'll reconvene here in a couple more months.
Sounds good.
That's it, brother. Go Dogs.
Dogs on top.